There was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor, while the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings as the night falls in on a rising tide. Look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride.
Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Bundy trial. Mistrial. Mistrial. Praise the Lord. We don't have the full way that we would want it with prejudice yet. That's still to be determined. But a mistrial for all of the Brady and Giglio violations, the willful withholding of evidence. Praise the Lord. That's all I can say about that. I just praise the Lord. We're going to have, I believe, John Lamb with us tonight. He's here. Good. John, I'm almost speechless. You want to take over, brother?
Well, I tell you what, it was a good day down here in Las Vegas again. And I know a lot of people probably have questions about this mistrial instead of a dismissal. But maybe they don't really quite understand exactly what happened. I know some people say, oh, it's a mistrial. The guys are going to be retried again. That is a small possibility. The reason of this mistrial is not that the defendants or any of these attorneys, the defense team, caused this mistrial. This was because the government, the prosecution, committed the crimes against the people. These Brady violations that were brought up again. This mistrial was caused by the same federal government that's prosecuting these guys. They was the one on trial today. The prosecutors were on trial because of what they did. They caused a mistrial because of the corruption that's going on in this court. And so with that said, now we have the next almost 2 weeks here to discuss in motions on whether it's going to be with or without prejudice. And that's going to be determined on January the 8th. So at this time, it doesn't look like this trial is going to go further at all. I mean, if it does, it's going to be set off for February. We got to pick a new jury. And it doesn't look like that's even going to happen. If things, the way it's playing out right now, more stuff is still being exposed, what these prosecutors did. We had 3,300 pages of new discovery, Brady violation discovery, that got turned over to the defense since this trial has started. These defendants never even knew about this 3,300 pages. I mean, that's a lot of documents, and there's still more to come. I mean, we have an
Not to mention all the ones that were shredded.
All that shredded stuff, we don't have none of that. We haven't even, these Brady violations that were brought up today that caused this mistrial does not even include the Wooten letter. The Wooten letter was not involved in this. That's still a dismissal or mistrial that's going to still be heard in the next few days.
So facepalm.
This was a big, big thing that happened today, and it really exposed the government. These prosecutors were speechless in the hour and a half plus that the judge just railed on the prosecutors and brought up all of these multiple Brady violations a day, the prosecutors had nothing to say. They set their silence. And they were scolded. This was willful, what the prosecutors did. And it was exposed to a courtroom full of people today. And it was not sealed. It was an open court.
Well, and, praise the Lord
God,
for that.
God was working today. God, yeah, it's praise the Lord for sure. It was a miracle what happened. I mean, just being able to expose them, just the truth coming out.
Well, we also had there on the scene Vincent Easley, who walked up to Suckling from the Center for Biological Diversity, which, you know, we've been digging into that for quite some time and exposing how they're Soros-funded. And there's a lot of foundations that spend a lot of money on them, and they've committed all kinds of dishonest attacks upon ranchers and property owners, and they sue the government repeatedly, spending taxpayer money out the yazoo to force the government to use environmental laws to basically steal people's property rights from them, their grazing rights, to get them off the land. I think it's quoted, they're quoted as part of their mission statement. And get this, John, I know that this is going to mean something to you. It is to undo man's dominion over the earth. What does that sound like? That sounds to me anti-what? God.
Satan.
That's all you can explain it as. It's Marxist, and Marxist's roots were in Satanism. If people do their research, he was a Satanist, and that's what these people. I don't even know if half of these people, they're being used as useful idiots and tools of a big agenda. They claim to be anti-capitalist, and at the same time, they take money from places like Goldman Sachs,
Rockefeller Foundation.
Rockefeller Foundation. Yeah, I mean, it's just
Sierra Club, Forest.
Yeah,
Gardens,
what
all of them.
What the Bundys were up against was not just the BLM. This is an agenda that have destroyed 50 some ranchers just in Clark County, let alone all over the western states. But anyway, so tell us how are the folks doing, John?
They're doing awesome. Every one of the defendants were excited today. We didn't want to prolong this any longer, so. We was excited. Everyone was overjoyed. The attorneys were. We knew this was a big win, even if it's going to take another couple of weeks or so to wrap this up with more motions and hearings. It definitely was a big win because the mistrial wasn't because of these defendants. It was because of what got, opened up, exposed from what this government misconduct. And so everyone was overjoyed today, and we had a packed-out courtroom. There was over 100 people in the courtroom itself, and there was another couple of dozen or more still out in the streets with signs and stuff that did not come in. But there literally was no more seats in the courtroom.
Well, you know what the Bible talks about bringing stuff to light as well. You know, I keep going back to the faith here that I've spoken to quite a few people today, and everybody always says the same thing, how the Bundys has stood fast for the Constitution, for their faith, and it really, really looks as though God worked miracles in just all of this devious deception coming to light. I don't know. I know that it's a half victory, because I would have liked for them to dismiss it, to do the mistrial with prejudice. I would like to see Cliven out, and I understand that he filed a motion, or was it Ammon that filed a motion, rather, to change the parameters of his release so that he could spend time with the family. That was denied, from what I understand, and Cliven is still in jail. I don't know why they could not let him go home for Christmas in light of this overwhelming evidence, but it just seems to me just more injustice. It's almost like they're tempering their victories. Like, they can't let anybody have too much of a victory all in one day, because maybe that would make bigger news or something. I don't know what this judge is thinking.
It's called saving face.
Yeah, there you go.
Definitely a saving face. We had some things exciting happen today still with that. The Roger Roots with Mr. Whipple, Clive and Bunny's attorney, filed an emergency motion to release Cliven on his own recognizance. That was filed late this evening, so that will be something that's going to be heard hopefully in the next day or two. It's an emergency hearing. It can be heard as early as tomorrow. Ammon Bundy's attorneys have filed more motions to change the release, along with Ryan Bundy, Ryan Payne, to take them off of ankle monitors. So that could happen at any time. So there's a lot of things that are happening. We're not done yet this week. We can have hearings tomorrow or Friday yet on this stuff. So I'm going to stay here on the ground in Las Vegas at least until Friday evening, just to cover this next few days and see what's going to happen.
Well, that's excellent, John. We're just so grateful that you're there.
John, I have a couple of questions.
Yeah, go. Yeah.
John, I wanted to make sure I understood correctly. Judge Navarro, after she finally got in the courtroom, because from what I understand, she got there late, correct?
She was late again, over a half hour. I had it wrote down on my notes, 31 minutes late.
You know, I find that amazing, because if it had been a defense, you know, that wouldn't have come out well. But anyway, on a different note, the question's this. I want to make sure that I understood correctly. When she first got into the court, the first thing she started addressing were the Brady violations, correct?
Exactly. She has changed her whole tune how she addresses mm-hmm. the court. Normally, she comes in the courtroom, she gives us a bunch of preliminary stuff of how we should act in court, no cell phones, and you'll be taken out by the marshals if you do. She didn't do none of that again today. She just sits down, just immediately starts into the Brady violations, and in the courtroom is just totally silent. So we're trying to catch every word that she's talking and saying and how she's addressing it. Within the first 5 minutes, everything was directed at the government totally. So I knew then that there was a big change here, and it was just like a pin drop to be heard in the whole courtroom, because we knew it was for our benefit. It was helping the defendants. Everything was. And she just scolded and scolded these attorneys for over an hour and a half and just went over each Brady violation lengthily. Mm-hmm. She didn't go quickly with it. She took her time and talked about the snipers and the camera setup and all of her notes and stuff she had with all of these Brady violations, and just scolded the government for an hour and a half. And at the very end, she went into a little short just talk about how she had not talked to anybody about her decision on this, even mm-hmm. another judge in the courthouse. She rode up in the elevator with this judge, and she didn't even tell the judge her decision. She said, "You all in the courtroom are the first to know my decision. No one else, I have not expounded it about this at all to nobody, that I am declaring a mistrial on this misconduct." And then she went on. It was good news. Because what she mentioned in this, then, she said, this trial, there's no way that these defendants can get a fair trial at this point, from this point on. And she says, I'm going to set a evidential hearing if it's needed for the first part of January. I'm giving you all a deadline of December 29th at 5 p.m., to have all your answers and motions on why I should not have this mistrial declared as with prejudice or without, mm-hmm. why I should on both sides. So they have till January 29th, 5 p.m., to influence a judge one way or the other why it should be with prejudice or without prejudice. And then that is going to be heard on January the 8th at 9 a.m. We should have that decision. So even
at
with the
trial,
we get it with prejudice, it's over with.
Right. If it's with prejudice, it's over with. It's done. And, you know, like you were talking about, one of the things I found interesting, because she went over the withholding of evidence, she went over the surveillance cameras, the BLM snipers, or quote-unquote marksmen, the FBI TLC logs and maps that were suppressed, all of this willfully suppressed. Did she use the statement willfully suppressed?
She used it multiple times. I'm going to guess, just off the top of my head, at least a dozen times. I actually wrote them down in my notes, and I don't have them right here in front of me, but every single time she mentioned a Brady Law violation, she mentioned this was willfully. Every single time. And she even made other statements that this was willfully, this was intentional. She just went on and on about that.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
I think if you listen to her words very carefully, and John may, you know, have given us an exact or close to an exact, but it's important because I think she telegraphed her decision, which is already, she's going to dismiss it with prejudice, and I'll tell you why. If she said from this point on instead of at this point, that means from this point on in any future trial, they won't get a fair trial either. That's a clue. And the other one was, what was the second thing you said that she made the statement of? The defendants, tell me why I should not dismiss this with prejudice. If she said that, then
she's already over the line, yep.
I think she gave a big hint there. Am I reading too much into it, folks?
No, I agree. Yeah. I agree, and I'll tell you that I'm not surprised that she's holding off on the with prejudice. I was talking with John Stattmiller earlier about this. I think that they're tempering their withdrawal from this case because today this is news. It's being reported, but it's not being broadcast across the nation like I think it would have been if it would have been dismissed with prejudice today and Clive and Bundy walked out of that courtroom. It would have been a triple exclamation point and a serious blow, PR blow. So I think she even, you know, whether for whatever reason, I think it's tempered. I don't see this going forward. I can't see... You know, my father was a judge, and I've been around a law firm my entire life, and I've seen cases come and go, and I've never seen or heard a judge in a case have so many clear, willful violations of the Brady rule and ever come back in any fashion. I don't see this happen. I just can't see them just declaring a normal mistrial without prejudice. I just can't see that happening. You know, I knew it was going to be a mistrial.
Yeah, one thing the prosecutors mentioned at the very, very end, that the judge gave the prosecutors a moment to talk, and it was short. It was less than 3 minutes. One statement they made briefly that they did not know if they had any intentions on trying to retry this if they were allowed even at this point. In the last two trials, you know, they stood up fast right afterwards. We will retry these defendants. And they fought their, you know, Eric Parker and Scott Drexler and all those guys, they fought their release to as hard as they could, calling them slithering cowards, dangerous. It isn't when they're going to kill. It's not if they're going to kill. It's just when they're going to kill or strike again. Portraying them, guys, is very dangerous. This time, that was all. None of this was brought up.
They can't argue that point anymore because you know what made us come from all over the country. I know what made me come. There were people that were already in the know. I'll put it to you that way. That told me from Bunkerville about the heavy-handed tactics of the snipers. And see, people have a distorted view of this still. They think that, you know, it was just a cattle roundup and people came from all over the country, and because they came from all over the country armed, then the government responded. It was the other way around. We responded because the government pulled the trigger on this and they came in full militarized with all of this. And in fact, they had been targeting them for some time long before the actual roundup. Of course, we didn't know that, but when this popped, they came in with this full militarized force. That is why the American people rose up and flocked there. It wasn't because we're anti, and this is another thing that keeps going out over the media, anti-government groups.
I lost my
with
audio.
Copies of the Constitution in our pockets, it is the definition of not anti-government. Anti-corruption, limited government, different ideology than progressive collectivism, centralized planning, communitarianism, yes. But not anti-government, in that we believe in the republic form of government the way it was intended. It's,
well, Tom,
I mean, it's just the disinformation is rich. Go ahead, Lori.
I was going to say, I would argue that we cannot be anti-government because the government is the people, and the politicians and the BLM are the servants. They are our employees, not our masters. So we can't be anti-government, because if we are, we would be against ourselves. The only ones that were anti-government out in Nevada in 2014 in that situation that happened with the Bundys was the BLM itself.
Hear, hear. I don't think I could have said that any better. Good job.
Thank you. So the interesting thing, John, I wanted to ask you about the threat assessments. Because I believe, if I heard correctly in your YouTube that you did earlier today, that there were 5 different threat assessments that were mentioned today. Is that correct?
It definitely is. There was 5 of them, and I wasn't even aware of all 5 of them for the day because these were kept under seal for so long. But I'll try to recap all 5 of them. I know there was an FBI threat assessment. There was a BLM threat assessment that they called a BUA, I think, is the letters for that one. Then there was a Southern Nevada terrorism threat assessment that was given. Then there was a 5th threat assessment that I don't remember the letters of it, that was done by another agency.
The extra double secret probation to report. Oh God!
Are you talking about the Gold Butte impoundment threat assessment?
Yeah. Yes, there was a Gold Butte impoundment threat assessment. I think it was either 2014 or 2012, because there was one done in 2012, one done in 2014, which included all 5 of these.
For $8,000 worth of grazing fees.
$8,815.
Okay, let's say $9,000. For $9,000 worth of grazing fees.
I'm getting a headache.
But the federal government spent over $300 million on the Bundys, so that makes sense in their math.
Oh, sure, it's peanuts.
Wow.
Central
go
planning
ahead,
at its finest. Central planning at its finest. Go ahead, John.
John, go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. So one of these things that really was very interesting brought up the desert Taurus, and it was talking about how the desert Taurus was not endangered, that they did not, and the grazing of the cattle did not endanger the desert Taurus. So,
no, it actually attracted them and gave them a habitat.
It did, and it brought Yes.
Let me speak to that just for a second. I spent time with Cliven out there at the side of the river where the Bundys have diverted channels of water on the side of the banks. And what has happened there is they took what would otherwise be a dry, desolate area, and they created a very lush habitat to
terraform it.
Really, he was being a steward of the land, and what they are finding and what we're being told from many of these places where they've run the ranchers off of the land is that these endangered species leave right after the ranchers do. It's them making beneficial use of the land and being good stewards of the land. People have this perception that these cattle just trample over everything and just destroy everything. That is not the case.
right.
Definitely it's not. It's been proven through this trial just here, just on all these kind of things, that actually the wildlife and the desert tortoise have flourished because of the cows being out there, because of the all these water areas that wouldn't be there if it wasn't for Clive and Bundy. So these animals have actually had a habitat to live because of it.
Yeah, $2 million facility that they put up to try and bring these things back. They had to euthanize a bunch of these tortoises. I say, instead of trying to collect $8,000 or $9,000 that he doesn't owe you, how about pay him the $2 million because he's the one that's actually bringing them back?
Yes.
Well, they could have saved themselves so much trouble if that was really their goal. But we all know that there's an underlying agenda here that it goes far beyond the Bundy's little ranch. Another thing, another one of these memes that keeps going out there is that he's this cattle baron. Oh, my Lord. When I sat in the ranch, his house there at the Bundy Ranch, it is the most modest, just a normal little ranch house. People have this perception like he's this big cattle baron. He's the face of patriarchal capitalism. It must be taken out. It's just they're idiots. They're useful idiots. I hate to be mean about it, but that's what it is.
And you know, speaking about that with the Center for Diversity and the individual that showed up there today and the connection with how they portrayed and the connection with the tortoises, if you will, the Center for Biological Diversity, if you remember, there was a Chilton Ranch lawsuit because they go after the ranchers, cattle ranchers. Okay. So Mr. Chilton filed a lawsuit against them and won after a lengthy trial in January of 2005. The jury returned a verdict stating that the center had lied in its news advisory as well as in several of the photos. The jury awarded judgment in favor of Mr. Chilton and Chilton Ranch, $100,000 in actual damage and $500,000 in punitive damages. Now, of course, they fought to appeal it, asking the Arizona Court of Appeals to review the jury's verdict. Arizona Court of Appeals Division 2 issued an opinion upholding the jury's verdict and the award. So let's remember that the Center for Biological Diversity, of course, we go over UN Agenda 21 and all that stuff all the time, is definitely connected. But in the appeals process, the amicus briefs were filed by the environmental corporations that advocated for the Center for Biological Diversity's right to lie, defame, misrepresent, and practice a reckless disregard for truth, as long as their intentions were to advance their environmental agenda. Here are some of the big names that chimed in with the amicus briefs to, okay, the center's defamatory actions. The Sierra Club, Forest Gardens, Arizona Wildlife Federation, and the Maricopa Audubon Society. So there are some more connections, which, of course, the reason we bring this up, we were talking about the tortoises. This is the gentleman that you just heard on that clip, executive director of Corrine Suckling of the...
Just so that the audience knows, go to rtrtruthmedia.blogspot.com. And the latest post that we have there, I'll share it to RBN's Facebook page and to the Twitter account after the show. Vincent Easley was on the ground there while everybody else was doing live streams. I happened to click over to his live stream, and he walked up to this fellow, and he confronted him on this whole business with the desert tortoise. And he said, well, I'm here because, you know, we can't have armed thugs taking over and doing this. And he said, yeah, I know what you mean. The BLM was horrible. I thought the guy was going to fall over. But
right, and then
anyway...
I was just going to say, when he started talking about the facts of the turtles, did you notice how he started walking away?
Yeah, well, no, you know when he actually really did walk away? When I heard the shofar blow, he knew his time was up.
They love those animals.
I heard they love goats, too. Well, I'm just going to leave that at that.
Now, I wanted to ask one more question real quick, Tom, to John.
Bath of it.
for John, I wanted to make sure that I remember this correctly. What date, the actual date, did the trial begin?
So if we do have a new trial, it will be set for February the 26th at 8:30 a.m.
Okay. I'm talking about this one that just got the mistrial. What date did that begin?
When did it start is what she said.
When did it start?
This one.
When did it actually start? It started November the 3rd. It was that first
November
Monday.
November the 3rd.
So if my Monday's correct, yes.
Okay. The reason I asked that, I want to make the audience very aware. John earlier stated 3,300 pages of discovery. This was discovery that had never been seen by the defense until this trial started. So
33.
Let's think about that. That is about a month and a half. 3,300 pages of discovery have been released to the defense that the prosecution's been hiding for all these years.
Not to mention the shredded stuff. I just have to keep getting that in there. Not to mention the bags of shredded material. Not to mention that, right?
It doesn't mention the shredded. There's 11 trash bags full of shredded.
So they had 3,300 pages delivered to 333. What? There's that number again. Is it me, or is that just a recurring 33 thing?
Oh, yikes. Wow.
Well, whether it is or whether it isn't, you know.
It's worthy of mention, at least, you know.
Yeah, to note.
You know, I would like to see, and
note
I know
to
this
Masons.
I would like to see the 11 trash bags and the federal agents whom were involved with shredding it have to sit down and try to play puzzle putting together and have to try to put these documents together.
No, I think more or less what they're probably doing at this point is trying to figure out how to take the assets that they own and probably send them to, this is just, you know, my thoughts.
Overseas?
Okay? Yeah, overseas, because I think that their career dissipation lights just kicked into overdrive.
And, you know, I just want to say this, and John, tell me your opinion on this as well as you, Tom, and you, Eric. But I think another one of the reasons that they didn't dismiss with prejudice today, and I think one of the reasons, and this is just my opinion, but I think one of the reasons they didn't do that today and release Cliven and everything all at one time is not so much because they didn't want so much media attention. They don't want the people to have that kind of hope.
Exactly.
Oh, well,
hope is dangerous.
They have a two-pronged thing going here. They simultaneously have an overall plan of clean this up and make it go away. Do not make martyrs out of the bunnies. However, you got to get out through this, Mrs. Navarro, to clean it up and get rid of it. And I thought it was very interesting. She made such a big point of saying, oh, I didn't talk to anybody about this. I'll bet she didn't get some with things whispered in her ear trying to make this go away, because it's not making the administration in Washington look very good. It's looking more like a year number 9 of Obama. So I think at the same time, it's the overall plan is to make this go away. They're not going to throw the Patriots any victories. They don't want us getting the idea we're winning. They're not going to give hope like Lori just said. They're going to save face. And if nothing else, they have a characteristic called spite, which often the evil enemy, the ones that work for the Antichrist system, often exhibit, and it will destroy them. Their own bad karma will destroy them. We don't really have to do much but sit back and make sure that we retain the moral and physical high ground.
We have to remember that permeating the justice, the goddess justice system that we have, permeating this system are a lot of Clinton and Obama appointees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And once they become politically ensconced, I don't know if
they got to get flushed
out.
They got to get flushed out in mass numbers, in large numbers, flush them out and get rid of them. Don't you agree?
I agree that they have to be flushed out. But the process of doing this is, you know, they've made it very difficult to do this. I mean, just to fire a federal employee, oh, my Lord. I mean, I remember,
Department
the Government Accountability Office and all of that stuff, what they went through when they the gross corruption that they had there. It's almost like they had to put them in a little padded room in their little safe space while they were getting a paycheck because of the protections that they built up with these people.
That is a good point. Yeah, we saw that in the Shane Bennett case. Lori, in the Shane Bennett case, we saw that. I don't know if we discussed this particular, there was so much going on, but at one point, one of our people spoke to the high sheriff in that county, and he said it was really just too bad. And he said, I've got two bad cops on my force in the sheriff's department, and I can't get rid of them because of the police union, and I'm having difficulty, and they're dragging the whole force down. So, yeah, a lot of times,
again,
Tom's right. It can be tough to get rid of the bad apples, so we got to make sure that we get behind our sheriffs and people like Matt Shea and let them know, start talking the hard talk and walking the hard walk, and the people will be behind you. A lot of times they get a little milquetoasty and little not quite going the full nine yards because they don't think the people are going to be behind them, and they don't want to be flopping out in the wind themselves. So it's important for everybody to give your representatives that courage to do the right thing and do the constitutional common law thing as well. Go ahead, guys.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
And I just want to say that hope is as dangerous to them as an idea that time has come, because you may kill a person, but you will not kill an idea.
No, you won't kill an idea, that's for sure. But, you know, I think to note here the union factor. Unions were created back in the days that workers needed their rights advocated because, you know, in all fairness, there was child labor, there was things like that. But see, this is what these collectivists do. They grasp on to a good cause and they twist it and turn it for their purposes. Why do we have, what on earth do we have are people that are working in government that are paid very good salaries, that have good 501ks, what on earth do they have collective bargaining rights for and unions? They don't need the protection that child labor needed to be stamped out and, you know, the harsh conditions in the coal mines and the different things that, you know, back in the day, the Industrial Revolution, I could see it. I could see it. I don't necessarily, there's a lot of problems rooted in that, but this is another form of the working, this whole communistic labor movement thing. I don't think many Americans realize that these unions are a communist concept. And this is why. This is why they wanted to take a long walk through the institutions, because once they become ensconced in these institutions and they have these unions that will protect them, it's like you can't, it's like getting a tick out that you rip out that it's still bit in you, and you got to get in there with the tweezers. It's just ridiculous. We're infested.
Yeah, don't forget, it's ripe ground for the organized crime syndicates to come in, and like, you know, the Cosa Nostra did on the docks and the labor unions and the truck teamsters, and you could go on and on and on with the effects of organized crime. The more I think about it, the more it probably organized crime has as much, if not more, of a stranglehold than the corporations do over our government, if you think about it from the side of, you know, the powerful unions and the power that's in the people, so to speak, the working man that doesn't really know. And a lot of them are waking up, hopefully, but they're being sold out by their union. The unions are the first place that organized crime is going to go and worm their way in, and like a tick, like Tom just said, it's difficult to get them out. And they're going to find a great money source there. They're going to bribe the local officials to turn the other cheek. They're going to pay off the witch's court as well. Oops, sorry, I wasn't supposed to use that word tonight. Go ahead, back to you guys.
And let's not forget, the Teamsters was, if I'm not mistaken, created by Jimmy Hoffa, and his son runs it now.
Well, created
by... there you go, great example.
I don't know.
You know, Hoffa was a great example. Does anybody have any speculation on who killed Jimmy Hoffa?
No.
Yeah, the BLM.
That's horrible, Tom.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
You're horrible. So, John, I did have, let's see, I had one other question for you, and I had written it down. So the listeners, make sure to understand the real death. There was more threat assessments that were brought about today that was not made aware of. Do you know if they are going to be releasing those threat assessments publicly, or this hidden information, is it finally going to be released to the public?
Yes, and I'll have to go shortly because I got another appointment, but I will answer that question for sure. That's a great question. At the very end, just before she brought the jurors back in, she made another ruling on the Las Vegas Review-Journal lawsuit on all these sealed discovery. And she is releasing it all. The next couple of weeks, these attorneys, prosecutors mainly, have to start working. And that has to be done before the 8th of January. The only thing they can keep redacted is names to protect certain individuals. But the rest of the stuff, she's going to go ahead and release all these sealed motions and discovery stuff that should not be sealed. And so that's all going to be opened up. So we should be getting bits and pieces of that within the next couple of weeks.
When is the next public hearing?
The next public hearing is January 8th at 9 a.m. is the next public hearing, and that's going to determine with or without prejudice on this mistrial and the final order to release all of these, all this motions, sealed motions and discovery. That's going to
And how about releasing the people that go along with them? Would that follow?
That should be beforehand, even. We're hoping Cliven gets out within the next couple of days with some emergency motions that were filed late tonight by Roger Roots and Whipple's office. So we've got several things here on the ground that can happen, you know, the next day or two, even over Christmas. Anything could happen here with several of these things that are pending.
Right.
So you got to understand.
I want to make sure.
Things.
Go ahead.
We've got it. We've got several other mistrial and dismissal motions that haven't even been heard yet. So there's several things that this just today was just on pretty much 8 Brady violations. There's still another 12 Brady violations that's pending right now that I know about. That was still on the
only
20 being opened
up. That's all?
Oh, yeah.
Just 20?
That's all right now. We've got the Wooten letter. Yeah, we've got another whistleblower that hasn't been brought out publicly. So we've got this is compounded. There's more.
20 is quite a number.
Let me say this. As you said earlier today, there were tons of people in the courtroom. Both sides were packed. If you want to be a part of history, you're listening to the sound of my voice, and you want to see a part of history, part of the trial of the century that has been going on, that has now been declared a mistrial officially, and it will be decided. The decision will come down on January the 8th, whether it will be with prejudice or without prejudice. Show up to the Las Vegas Federal Courthouse January the 8th, 2017. I believe it's 9 a.m. And John, can you tell them the exact address so they can be there to help pack this courtroom for this amazing day?
Well, we got that magic number again, 333 Las Vegas Boulevard. We welcome you there. I'll be back there. It's going to be some more breaking news coming out at that time. So much is going to be happening between now and then and that day. So, please show up if you can.
John, I thank you so much for that. And folks, you can go to my Facebook, Tom Lacovara Stewart, or RBN. We'll post you John's links if you're not already, which I doubt. Our listeners are probably tuned into this pretty well, but you can go to RTR Truth Media at Twitter. That's at Tom Lacovara, or RTR Truth Media on Twitter, and rtrtruthmedia.blogspot.com. We'll be posting there too. We're constantly sharing his links. I recommend that you follow him when he goes live, because these reports come in live as he's doing live streams from there. Is there any other information that you need to share with us that we need to get to the people there, John, that you can think of?
I think we've covered pretty much everything. I'm going to stay here, like I said, a few more days just in case Clive and Bundy gets released tomorrow or Friday. There's a big chance that it could happen. We're just waiting to see if it actually does. But I'm going to stay here before I leave out Friday night, Saturday, back to Montana. But other than that, I know definitely I will be back here on January the 8th.
Well, if he does get out, I'm going to hold you to doing this for me. I give him a great big hug for me, for my mom, who introduced me to his story. God rest her soul. I know that she's smiling down on us from heaven. And, you know, it's just what a wonderful family. Thank you for joining us, John, very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, John. Thank you very much. Now, Tom, I wanted everyone to be able to hear something really special. Brian Hyde interviewed Carol Bundy and her thoughts on what went on today. So I would like to share that with everybody. And so if you would, Mike, go ahead and play Obi-Wan.
All right. I have sprung a surprise interview here on Carol Bundy. Brian Hyde coming to you from the courthouse, and Carol Bundy is here. Well, Carol, this was quite a day. You know,
quite a day.
The judge declared a mistrial, and the first thing I want to ask you is, what was your reaction on hearing the news?
Well, at first it wasn't what we wanted to hear.
What would you have preferred?
I would have preferred her to drop all charges and to let the man come home, free man. I don't think they haven't proven any guilt. In fact, she said that she went through all the violations that he did, mm-hmm. all the Brady violations that were wrong, and then she says, however, I have to decide on if it's with prejudice or not prejudice. And for me, I sat there and I thought, you know, I want my husband home for Christmas, and but my husband stands on principle. My husband says, I will not trade one form of prison for another. I will walk out when I'm a free man, when I can do what I need to do. And I love you, sweetheart. If that's what you want to do, then Merry Christmas.
Well, from my understanding, Ryan made the motion that that they would modify the order regarding their pretrial release. And I've talked to a couple of the attorneys involved here. I've talked to Morgan Philpott. I've talked to Maysoon Fletcher. And my understanding is that the wheels are turning. They can't get a straight answer, a definitive answer
yet.
But it is a possibility.
The lawyers are all working right now and filing emergency motions to change so that Ammon can maybe come to the ranch with his family for Christmas and be with us. There's also an emergency file that my husband might be able to be released a free man. And there's a lot of people going on, and I got a lot of press here. And like I've said before, like, press, where are you when we need you the most? You know, when we came out day after day after day, there was no press. But now today we come out, and they're saying, how are you feeling? What do you like about this? And I'm going, where were you?
Okay, so I have a follow-up question for you regarding the press. Have you seen the press become less sensational, less biased in their coverage? Have you seen a softening?
Depends on who it is.
Okay. No, I understand.
I call them on the carpet all the time. It depends. It depends on who it is, but I do think that the press is shocked that they have been saying the Bundys are terrorists, the Bundys are this, or the Bundys are that, and all at once the tables are being turned, and we're seeing that the prosecutors are the ones that have lied. And I have said all along that the truth will set us free.
Yep.
I believe that I know my family's innocent. And the truth will set us free. And it might be tomorrow. It might
Amen.
Be next year. But they will be free.
I think a lot of people are having the same experience that I've heard members of the press. You know, I've talked to just a couple of different members of the press who said, I had this idea of who the Bundys were until they met you, until they talked with you, until they had a chance to visit with Cliven or to visit with Ryan or Ammon. And what they find is that your family was unfairly reduced to like a one-dimensional headline by people who didn't know you and didn't really care. They wanted clicks or they wanted ratings. And one thing I have to compliment you and your family on is you have maintained a very positive and long-suffering attitude. Ammon made the comment the other day, we're not bitter, we're not angry,
no.
We're not filled with hatred, you know, and I've seen that in you as well. I don't know how you do it, but
well,
I sure appreciate it.
The thing of it is we're educating America. We're educating the world one day at a time, one minute at a time. And we feel that that's what we're supposed to be doing.
Well, I have to admit, as I was listening to the decision from the judge this morning in the courtroom, cutting through the legalese and what all does this mean? I wasn't sure whether I was happy or sad or in between.
Well, I have to tell you, I was in the car on the way because I'd had some things that I had to deal with at home.
Uh-huh.
So I was a little late getting here, and I was texting back and forth. And when it came a mistrial, I said, okay, with prejudice or without? And I was excited, and then they said that she wasn't going to make that decision till
January 8th.
Yeah. But it could change.
Yeah.
You know, well, one thing that is for sure, when you deal with the Bundys, you never quite know what you're going to get.
What? Something that
you might get a tough steak, you might get a delicious steak, you might get really good.
Something that Maysoon Fletcher, who was the attorney who was standing there at Ryan's side, as Ryan represented himself, something that she had said to me, because I asked her, I said, okay, help me understand with prejudice, without prejudice, if it is a mistrial with prejudice, that's the same as a dismissal. It's done. There's no double jeopardy. They're not going to come back after him again.
No.
So she said, I'm very positive. She says, this can only be counted today as a win for the defense.
I think it was huge today that the judge sat there and read off all the violations that the prosecutions had done. And the prosecutors were actually at the ranch. So they have no right to be at the ranch. They become then witnesses, and now they're the prosecutors sitting on the stand.
Yeah.
I think the judge sees that. I think she knows that. I just wait for the day that they come home, and it's going to be soon.
Well, the prosecution had its feet held to the fire. There's a lot of, rightful celebration going on here. And I'm looking forward, Carol. We're going to be celebrating again.
Folks, we'll be posting this
before Christmas.
We'll be posting this as well. Along with all of our other links.
All in the Lord's time.
Okay. Thank you so much for visiting with us.
We have PJ Barton, a host, is on the line. PJ, how are you, brother?
Oh, cool.
You're a mighty, mighty man to survive what you survived. Congratulations. Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
Actually seem powered by it. I can hear a stronger man talking today. That's you.
Yes, sir. I'm proud today.
Oh, very good.
I'm proud of my friends. I'm proud of God love her soul, my mother, who blessed me with introducing me to this story back in 2014. I'm blessed for the time that I spent with some of the finest individuals that I had ever gotten the pleasure to stand on. What I can actually say, there was a time where we stood on free ground in America, and I have no regrets at all. If I had it to do over again, I knew what I was potentially facing, and I had to make a judgment call because, you know, there had been some past where I'd gotten in trouble, and I knew that I had gotten in trouble, so I had to make some decisions, and those decisions were, when I gave my life to something better, I had already taken, long ago, I had taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and the evidence that was presented to me, it's not a really courageous thing, in my opinion. It's our duty, and if men have not, men and women, had not done this in the founding of our republic, we wouldn't even have this to fight for right now. So I'm just blessed to have been among some of the finest individuals that I'd ever had the pleasure of meeting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it must be a shocking, shocking loss to have lost Lavoie Finicum. I mean, that's absolutely sick as me to my stomach, a man murdered in cold blood. But leave that to another day, because that's another case that has to be taken. But no, you must have felt, and I've been in a situation where, I won't go into now, looking after a person who has been picked on by the state who is mentally ill, but you feel you're surrounded by evil. Did you actually have that feeling?
Of course, we have that feeling, but I lean on my faith. You know, I know that we have listeners out there that are of all different persuasions, but I am a steadfast Christian. I gave my life to certain tenets and to the Lord Jesus Christ, and I put my faith in Him, and that has literally given me no fear when I know in my heart, and I'm convicted that I know that this is the right thing to do. There's no fear. And this is one of the reasons why they have to destroy people like us or try to destroy people like us, because they don't comprehend. Once you've given your life to that, it's things clear. And I'm not, there was evil all around us, but I don't fear it. Like Ryan Bundy said, when we had said to him, you know, there may be FBI here, this, and he said, so what? Let the Lord shine a light in their heart and let them learn by our example. And what you just heard with Carol Bundy, the reason why they're not bitter, the reason why there's no hate. So what does the other side have to do? The other side has to say they're haters, they're racists, they're this, they're that. They're filled with hate. That's why they're doing what they're doing, because they want to defend their God-given rights? My Lord, how hard they have to twist that media message.
Well, Carol Bundy is leading by example, which is the most powerful thing you can do as a Christian, and you are too. But I won't delay you. I just want to congratulate you where you've got to at this point. And you have a lot of things to talk about there, but did they define disgraceful charge of constructive possession in court or not?
With me?
Well, yeah, that's what the charge you.
Yeah, had I known, you know, my wife was separated from me, and I would have spent probably 3 years fighting. I made a tactical decision based upon certain needs, which, by the way, for our listeners out there, if you give us your prayers, because I'm not going to be with my wife this Christmas, and I know that's going to be hard on her. So your prayers will be very much appreciated. Sure. But I'm almost out, and I'm looking into potentially some post-conviction relief, because I feel as though I wasn't able to bring into court what we now have. Okay, I couldn't bring into court and present in front of a jury what made me make the decisions that I made. Had nothing to do with even my own personal protection or anything. It was the love of others and my the obligation that I felt to stand by people who I believed were not only being wronged, but being wronged criminally. And that is what we almost
stand
for.
They wouldn't even let you out of the cell to get to the law library or get pencil and paper. How are you going to defend yourself? I mean, the deck is totally stacked. You were way persecuted. It wasn't fair. And yes, retract. We'll help you do that.
Yes, sir. Okay, we've run out of time. Thank you, PJ. Okay. I really appreciate you calling. I'll contact you tomorrow. We'll be back after a few words. We'll be back after a few words from our sponsors, Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast on RBN.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75% dandruff. Almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-877-877.
928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.